Welcome to the ANN After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and with me is James Beckett.
Hey.
Like, we are here to finally catch up on Orb. Remember that anime we were watching last year? Mm-hmm. And then along with Dandadan, and then
the long ago times.
Yeah, in the long ago times. And we got a little, I think we got a little orbed out. It wasn't meeting our expectations, and we're watching it again next to Dandadan. So
I definitely got orbed out.
Yeah, it definitely got orbed out. I got so orbed out that I hadn't watched any orbs since about episode 14. So I watched episode 15 through 19 today in one go. And it was actually a lot easier to do than I thought. It did not make me sleepy. I was not bored. And I am now fully back aboard the orb train now that we've gotten a new protagonist.
Thank orb.
Thank orb. A time skip. And just some really neat dudes with mustaches. So we're gonna talk about
wild mustache game in this era of Orb is something special.
And it is.
I respect it.
It's so good. So we're gonna be breaking down how things are going on in the Middle Ages with literacy and science.
But we're great.
Not great. But
could be worse.
Could be worse. Better. Strides are being made. And we're also going to talk today about Zenshu.
Hell yeah, we are.
Because James is not up to date on Apothecary Diaries yet. So you can expect that probably next week.
I'm trying so hard. There's so many episodes.
There is. Yeah. Yeah, it is a lot of episodes. I didn't know you were like only about 4 episodes in. So you had
quite
a lot to catch up on. Yeah,
I do.
But they're at like a mushroom plot right now, James. So I need you to get there so we can talk about deadly mushrooms. But
yeah.
And as far as the news goes, I've been avoiding it in all areas of my life. We're not talking about it so much.
Why would you want to do that, Lindsay? What is happening in the world right now that you would want to not have to engage with or interact with at any point in time throughout your day or week or month or year?
I don't know.
Me neither. Has that been doing the same thing? I have not been looking at the news.
I want to say, even though we're joking about it, I'm not advocating for inaction or ignorance here. What I'm advocating for is doing whatever you need to maintain your mental health and then prepare to uplift, resist, and help those in your community as much as you can. Mm-hmm. When you are ready and able to do so, stay vigilant, everybody. But, right now, it's just a little anime podcast. So we're just going to be focusing on that right now.
I've realized is that it's not knowing the things that are happening. That's the worst part.
Yeah.
It's just the social media feedback where the thing that you already know is happening is mm-hmm. being retold to you in all of the most distressing and upsetting and negative ways imaginable, which again, I understand why people are feeling upset.
Yes.
You live in upsetting times.
Yes.
But again, there's only so much that doom scrolling is going to do for me other than shorten my lifespan.
Right. So,
like you said, we got to find ways to be positive and to take action and annoy the hell out of the people that were stupid enough to think that they have any idea of what they're doing running mm-hmm. this country. Mm-hmm. And if we can annoy the hell out of them enough, maybe they'll just go away forever.
We can only hope. At least one of them's on borrowed time. Don't read my blue sky, but yeah. Yes. So as James said, doom scrolling really, it's very easy to get sucked into it. I was in that space quite a lot circa last time around, and it didn't help me at all. I think really this is a situation, this sounds so cliche because people quote it all the time, the Mr. Rogers quote about looking for helpers, but either be a helper or look for helpers and find out what you could do. Support your local libraries.
Support your local libraries. They need it so badly.
Support your local libraries. See what you can do about getting on PTA within your local school district. There's all those sorts of things that you can do locally that actually make a huge difference for the people you can directly help. You're not part of the federal government and can't influence the federal government, but vote in your local elections, all those sorts of things. Okay. And make sure you're making time for yourself to do what you just enjoy doing. Okay, so all of that said, Zenshu or Orb first?
Let's do Orb first.
Let's do Orb first. Okay, so we're at episode 18 of Orb. Although, again, we have not talked about Orb since about episode 13.
A lot has happened.
We're going to try and like kind of speed run this. Hopefully you guys are like up to date on the show and weren't using us as your primary method of experiencing the show, because you should really just catch up on the episodes and watch them. Again, it's streaming on Netflix. So where we actually last left off was Baldeni and Oggsy had been captured by Noak after he sat in on a conversation they were having with his daughter, Jolenta, at a tavern. And then after said meeting, he was like, just one more thing. He kind of Columbo'd them, and because they were giving off vibes of things not being quite right. And Noak had actually attempted to arrest Oggsy several years earlier in that whole wagon fiasco. Yeah. So he captures both of them, puts them under torture, and starts asking him where the heretical heliocentric materials are at, using the pair of anguish on our poor Oggsy. Mm-hmm. And Baldeni finally shows that, no, really, he does have a heart, actually, and fesses up to where the chest that they had been entrusted with is. Noak gets a hold of it. But, of course, Baldeni had the craziest plot.
I don't even say this necessarily negatively. One of the stupidest plans I've ever seen in my life. Like one of the most bug nuts, moronic, ridiculous plans. It works.
It worked for Golden Kamuy. Why can't it work for Baldeni? Why can't he just write a whole novel tattooing it on the heads of unhoused folks living in the slums of town? And then letting them grow their hair back so that no one could find it. Took about 60 bald heads to write everything down.
At some point in this process. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Nikki, former This Week in Anime writer Nikki, is here. She's also been watching Orb. And she says, Baldeni is like the audacity incarnate, because everything he's done up to this point is just the most absurd, self-absorbed. Like, the only reason he's even able to do this is because Oggsy had been giving those people bread to help feed them. Something he chastised him for previously. He was like, my buddy gave you bread, so can I just, like, tattoo your head? Mm. I'll give you more bread. And they agreed to it. Not sure how I feel about that. It's very giving Abercrombie and Fitch shirts to the homeless to make a statement kind of feeling to me, but
he's not like a monster.
No,
you know, he also like he cares about getting his legacy out there and preserved.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even like when he fesses up to stop the torture, I imagine a lot of that is because he knows that even if they find the chest, they're not going to find his weird nonsense backup plan. Because who in the name of God would ever think that? Which I guess is why he did that.
I guess so. Yeah. Another thing.
I just say, thank God that none of those poor beggars died.
Yeah.
In the intervening time, from all of the many different ways they could have easily died or just moved somewhere else to try to find more food once the nice guy with the bread stopped coming by.
Yeah.
If a few of them go, then the whole thing's ruined.
I was also going to say, there's this particular development is actually still left hanging as of episode 18, because the version of the heliocentric writings that we see past this is a copy of Oggsy's journal, right?
Which I could have sworn we saw get burned.
Yeah, I thought that got burned. But perhaps he copied Oggsy's journal onto their heads, because the manuscript that we see our new protagonist flipping through is not very thick. Maybe that is only about 60 pages. So maybe it's Oggsy's journal that's tattooed on their heads, and then we're supposed to presume that the priest who was given the knowledge after they've been killed is the one who then copied it down.
But did Oggsy's book have the actual mathematical formulas? Because I feel like that, I mean, really, like, that's the thing, right? It's like, you right. can say all you want that the heliocentrism is true, but the whole point is that they need to actually prove it with math.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I mean, maybe Ugsy just copied that down.
Yeah, possibly.
I don't know.
Yeah. Nanigashi says, up until the beginning of the Renaissance, it was pretty usual for scholars to keep their work secret, even from other scholars. That does make sense. So, yes, Ugsy and Badeni are dead.
They're dead.
But one of the big twists that happened was also Yolenta getting pulled into it, mostly due to a particular bishop's scheming. Mm-hmm. Like, we had met this bishop before, and we knew that he gave the impression that he sucked. I think he's supposed to be the illegitimate child of the
He's a nepo baby.
Yeah, he's a nepo baby. Wants to get his dad out and wants to take over. And he thinks the best way to do that is to make Noack lose favor with the bishop himself by framing, well, it's not really framing, but he doesn't care if it's true or not, Yolenta as a heretic. And Yolenta escapes thanks to one of the like new inquisitors basically having a heart.
Well, and he learns that it's all political.
Yes, and he also learns, like, it's all political. And he learns that
it's not about fighting evil. It's not about protecting people. It's just about power. And he's like, oh, well, screw that. I'm not going to kill a small child so that someone can get a promotion.
Yeah, because I believe she's about like 14 to 15 or something like that. So
she's a malnourished Middle Ages Poland 14 to 15. So she probably looks 10.
Yeah, she's small. She is small. And so he instead is made up to look like her corpse. And this is told to Noack, who at this point believes his daughter is dead. And we haven't seen him again since then, but Noack's going to come back.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense for his character arc for that to just sort of be the end of it to me. Like, I feel like he's...
Yeah, no.
But I don't know. Could he be dead? Because we're like 25 years into the future. Noack...
No, he's not dead.
You don't think so? You think he's just...
Let me put it this way. If he was dead, that would be stupid and dumb. Like, if the show literally just said, no, we're done with him, that would be not... That would be pretty bad writing, I think.
Yeah.
Because he's, like, barely had any arc.
No.
Yeah, we have got the one episode where we saw his flashback, and I guess saw a little bit more of his humanity and stuff, which is fine. But but he hasn't done anything with it yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we need that.
Yeah, Noack still hanging in the wings, and instead, in these past 25 years, there's been the Heretics Liberation Front.
Yeah,
which is amazing. We see three men particularly who are in this. It's Schmidt. Oh gosh. It's not Kowalski, but it's pretty similar to Kowalski.
I just know Schmidt the mustache and everyone else is secondary.
They're and then there's like Schmidt the Frey, I think his name is Frei or something like that. And then there are naturalists, which I wasn't familiar with the naturalist movement at all, but to sum it up, their point of view is that any of man's attempts to rationalize God is faulty in and of itself, because man could not know God in that way, and that God exists in the due to the fact that the natural earth exists at all. Mm-hmm. But it kind of seems like, well, I wouldn't say they believe that God has no influence on their lives, because he very much believes in fate. So it's still this whole idea that God has a plan for everyone, I think. But,
well, he does explicitly say he does not think God has a personality. Like, he doesn't think God has like a brain, or, you know, God's not like a person.
Yes.
It's like a force.
Yeah. Yeah. And that you can observe that force within the beauty of nature, essentially, like the sunrise and things like that.
Damn Polish hippies.
And that, therefore, like, any orthodoxy by the church is wrong, tyrannical, and foolish. And so they are rescuing any heretics that are being held by the church, blowing up the church.
Cutting the arms off of people in the church.
Cutting the arms off of people in this church, reclaiming heretical materials. They're 100% for the liberation of ideas, and that information should be freely available to the public. Basically, and they, Schmidt couches this in sort of the idea of Socrates and Plato, and that even, and he represents this himself, that even if he is at complete opposite ends of belief with someone, he maintains the right to have that belief without punishment. Mm-hmm. And it was at this point that I had to pause and go for a walk, because I was like, wait, what time period does this take place again? Because as we were talking about at the top of the show, it feels very relevant.
Right? Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. It's just sort of, but also in a way that, like, some things just, like, don't change. It's weird how
people are people.
That even with the advancement, like advancements of a ton of other areas within human progress, it all still seems to boil down to these, like, same arguments for centuries. It's kind of frustrating to even be aware of. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier because I put on the album American Idiot by Green Day, and I was like, when was this written? It's all the same shit.
Other than the casual homophobic slurs, that album could have been written 2 years ago.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm watching Orb, and I'm watching some guy talk about how, about like the censorship of information being withheld from the public so that they can't formulate their own ideas as a matter of control. And I'm just like, yeah, that's now too.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's real sad. Thankfully, we have a disaster capitalist queen to save us, both in terms of advancing the plot and also, and I'm being a little snarky here, being a character that I am super interested to follow and see more of.
She's doing a lot for the point of view character, because I never really vibed with Beldeni and Oxy as a pair. They were hard to root for, I guess, because Beldeni just was a self-absorbed jerk the whole time, and Oxy, unfortunately, was not particularly well educated, so he often had difficulty resisting or presenting alternate viewpoints to Beldeni just because he didn't know as much as him, and so he couldn't make his arguments nearly as well.
The show is so busy going through its whole heliocentrism proof thing that I just felt like we got to see that Beldeni's a jerk and stuff, but I felt like we never really got to know them, you know?
Yeah.
Like they never felt like real people to me. They just felt like, and we talked about this, they felt allegorical, like representations of different points of view. And I could see the points that the story is trying to make. But like, for instance, when they died, the show was trying really, really hard to make their death this kind of poetic, sad, melancholy thing.
Yeah.
Oxy has that. He finally can look up and look with hope towards his death, which is, you know, literally the culmination of his whole character arc.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel anything. I was just like, okay, well, all right.
Let's get
on to the next one.
Chapter 3.
But the minute we met Draka,
yeah,
I was like, this girl is one of those unfortunate souls who was born about 100 to 300 years too early.
Yeah.
To the point where I was even researching this, because a part of me was like, okay, I've come to terms with the fact that Orb is not trying to actually be very historically accurate.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. But
I was like, were we having these dialogues about religion and atheism to this degree in Europe in the 13th, 14th century? And my answers from my brief research seems to be to the point where regular people would be openly discussing philosophy regarding the existence or lack thereof of a higher being. I don't know. At least not outside of like the Middle East, where a lot more philosophizing of that nature was a little more open.
Yeah.
So like the idea that this random nomadic girl would just be openly saying, yeah, I don't believe in God. I don't believe there's no higher power. r/atheism, baby. I don't know how much I necessarily buy it as this is a conversation that people in this time period in this place would really have. Mm-hmm. But as far as a person who is surrounded by people that terrify her due to what she perceives to be their ignorance, and also she knows that in this world, the only thing you can really do is hit that grind set mindset and do your absolute best to not starve to death. I like that a lot more than the grumpy monk who just wants to get published.
Yeah. I was talking about this show in another Discord. Nikki was there. And so I wanted to give her credit for the fact that it's very likely that Draka is Romani.
Given the skin tone. And
yeah. And she's from a nomadic tribe. And I am not personally super familiar with Romani spirituality, but it may be more common within her tribe to have those sorts of conversations. She did say that a lot of her tribe had already converted, which I'm sure they were highly pressured and forced to do, probably, or be killed.
Yeah, that's true.
Because her uncle was an out-and-out atheist as well.
He really sucked.
He sucked for unrelated reasons. But I was also thinking, because that conversation was happening with the Liberation Front, that she may have only broached it because she felt in that situation that she wasn't at risk because of some other things that Schmidt had already said up to that point. She mistook them originally for also being atheist, because they were being so openly defiant of the Church orthodoxy. And then that point she asked them, oh, so then you must be atheist. And they're like, well, no. And then it's, oh, we can't put cats out of the bag. So yeah. I guess we're having this philosophical discussion now.
I think my favorite moment of the whole episode is when Schmidt is, and for one, I just have to get this out, I cannot talk about this character without thinking of the character Schmidt from New Girl.
Okay.
That's just all I picture in my head. But when he when she says, oh, so you're atheist too, right?
Yeah.
And he takes a second. He's like, wait, so you believe love? And she's like, no, I just don't believe in God. So you believe there's no God? That's what I said. And his brain breaks.
Yeah.
And he says in the funniest way, I'm actually perplexed to the point of rage. But I can only hope that your fate is to vanish from the earth forever. I'm like, oh my God.
It was something I don't know if it was vanish from the earth forever. It sounded like, at least how I interpreted that, was we're on the same path right now, but as soon as our destinies are no longer aligned, I hope to never, ever see you again. Kind of the impression I got from that. Not so much die, but
your very existence bothers me. Contemplate you as a being without being overwhelmed with anger.
And that is interesting, because he is so very firmly set in the wrongs of the church, but it does still say that culturally the concept of just not believing that there is a higher power still in some way is completely confounding to him, because that's just a matter of fact still. Even if
Jefferson...
the men running things are wrong, but obviously there's still a God.
Yeah. Well, even Thomas Jefferson, he had to say he was a deist, you know.
Right.
He believes that there's some higher power. And if, my friends and I have always joked that behind closed doors, he'd be like, oh my God, these people. Back even in the 1700s, you couldn't just say you didn't believe in God. Even if you were a crazy rebel colonist, church-hating freako who made his own anti-supernatural version of the Bible.
The Jefferson Bible, yeah. I bought a copy for my son while we were in D.C.,
that's so cool.
It's very thin. It's not weird. Weird. Not as much stuff in the Jefferson Bible. It's just quick read, really. Draka's really refreshing in that way. Let's talk a little bit about her being a capitalist queen. So with that part is also interesting to me. She has what seems like a unusual preoccupation with death. She's afraid to die, and this seems to be related to her, I don't want to say hoarding money, but she's got piles of it, and this is all tying into this trauma of her people used to be pillagers, and that got her father killed. And when her uncle first proposes atheism to her, stop thinking about this as a preordained destiny that happened to your dad. Why did this actually happen to him? And then think about what you can learn from that. And so when she does that, she realizes, well, if we didn't have the need for money, then there would be less suffering. So what we need to do is, and this leads her down this sort of capitalism thing of, well, let's stop stealing money and instead produce something of value so that we have a steady income. And
So I'm just imagining just like an anime panel at some really small local con. This is like capitalism as a trauma response, or capitalism, the logical conclusion of the death drive. I can't argue with your logic. Where she's like, you know, if we could just make stuff to give us forever money, then we'd be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if I died, it would be, well, I almost wonder if she's at a point where she thinks if she accumulates enough money, maybe she just won't die. It's like this sort of, she's gotten it kind of
back. Is she wrong?
She's got.
Is she incorrect?
I guess no one has obtained enough money yet to find out.
Explain Robert Kennedy Jr. to me without including some kind of freaky deaky hyper-capitalist cloning grift or something, because that man is literally a ghoul.
We're talking about the guy who collects animal corpses for reasons, right?
Yeah, the guy who, according to his cousin, would show off blending up small rodents and rabbits for the birds of prey that he'd feed.
You know, I hadn't heard that one yet.
Yeah.
I know of other people who have done similar things to that, but they all ended up in jail for murder and cannibalism, so... James is taking the longest sip of tea.
Actually, it's raspberry vanilla sparkling water.
By Ouroboros, not a sponsor.
It's true. Not a sponsor.
They've got cute can art.
This is like the best sparkling water. This has somehow become a sparkling water podcast. This is like Liquid Death levels of addictive.
Is it really?
Oh, they have lavender cucumber.
Okay. These are all flavors.
Strawberry basil.
Made for me personally. Oh, my husband jokes that if you put a herb in there, I'll drink it.
This tastes like what Mau Mau's collection of herbs and other things must smell like.
Is it also zero calories, James?
Yeah, zero calories, zero sugar. It's got carbonated water, natural raspberry flavor, vanilla extract. Not a sponsor.
Again, not a sponsor. So going back to Draka there for a second. So yes, she's got this preoccupation with accumulating money. Her uncle has three rules when he first introduces atheism to her. The third one is what screws her over, and it's the fact that he self-preservation above all else. He's very upfront about that. And so when he gets caught sipping from his secret liquor cabinet in an abandoned village where he reads books, he basically offers...
Now we all get turned to the dark path.
He offers to sell her to a bishop. Now, I'll be honest, the same bishop who made it look like Yolenta was dead. I'll be honest, I don't know why the bishop wanted her. Like, at first it was like, is this like a human trafficking gross type situation? Wouldn't put it past the church. But when they finally do meet, he just asks her a bunch of questions like he cares about her opinions, even though they've never met before or anything. And then when she impresses him, he's just going to take her back to possibly get more of her opinions on how to be a better capitalist. But that's when they cut the dude's arms off. And
yeah, it's kind of weird. I'm not entirely sure what that's all about.
Yeah.
I'm still honestly not really sure what the conflict between him and the anti-church Schmitz is.
Yeah.
It's obviously he represents the church, but as far as their individual, I don't really know what that dude's about, because all we know is that he's kind of power hungry.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's willing to screw people over, you know, do crimes to keep power. So like, I guess maybe we're just meant to see that he's the kind of power hungry sociopath who's actually too self-serving to be racist, because he recognizes that anyone that could be a tool, even if they're a Romani woman who by all rights shouldn't even know how to read, he's willing to hear her out if it means that he gets another rung up the ladder, which... Okay. Well,
yeah.
But yeah, I don't really know where that's going.
Yeah, I don't really know where that's going either. And then by the end of the episode, we find out that the leader of the Heretic Liberation Front is, of course, Yolenta.
Yes. And actually, Lindsay, can you pull the screenshot of Yolenta up on the screen here? Because I need to, James has a soapbox that he needs to stand on really quick.
Okay. Is it about how dark it is?
Yeah. Okay. If you're gonna reintroduce one of the only surviving main characters of your show, a character whose return is supposed to have some kind of impact on us, right?
Yeah.
Why would you film it like you were on the inside of a fishbowl that hadn't been cleaned in like 2 to 3 years?
Yeah.
Why? Lindsay, why does the show look like this?
It's always so dark. It's so dark. I mean, let me go back, like all the screenshots from this episode. Okay, that one's fine, actually. And this one's literally of the dawn.
That shows you they know how to make things look right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why does it look like this?
Yes. Yeah. But then everything else is like this, like all the time.
Everything looks like an ashtray from the 70s that's colored like pea soup that you would find like in some old retirement home room filled with like cigarette butts. I don't understand. And I will say this is better than it was. They've actually improved their nighttime lighting a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there haven't been any scenes where I just straight up can't tell what's going on. And they've been getting a little bit better about making use of their obviously CGI light sources.
Yeah.
But I just don't know why. Like, why does it look like this?
Isn't this also a common complaint with Netflix in general?
Yes.
Too, though, that their stuff, and I remember Geeta Jackson for the live action stuff asked some questions about this, and if I can find their write up, but I honestly think some of it has to do with Netflix encoding of everything across the board because it just tends to be too dark. I watched this with the window of my office open, so I had sun glare, which was actually helpful on my screen for seeing. What was going on?
And you can see in my screenshots too, and I don't know if it's because I'm on a 4K monitor. The compression is so bad. The artifacting is so bad whenever the blacks get so crushed.
Yeah. I feel like StreamYard is doing us all some favors for all of you who are watching this, but I'm looking at the screenshots on a second monitor as well. It's not a 4K monitor, but I can see the artifacting. There's artifacting through here and here as well. And just all over the place up in this dark space where it's just not like a smooth image. It's just blocks, big pixel type blocks of different colors put in there. Yeah, once we run the screenshot through a third party streaming service and you're able to look at it through your own screens, this probably all looks consistently colored. But if I sent you the raw files, they would not. So,
and that's what it looks like. That screenshot, that's what it looks like on pretty much any device when you're watching it through Netflix. And I know that's like really technical, but anime is it's a visual medium, you know?
Yeah. And I want to say this artifacting stuff, I see it on Netflix live action dark scenes all the time too. Yeah. So it's just,
It makes me wonder if I would maybe be more like, if the story would be able to pull me in more if I just read the manga.
Yeah. Yeah, and the manga is also available in like really big omnibus releases. I like those. So it's like 3 volumes in 1. So you're getting quite a lot for a single purchase. Maybe it would also look better on the home video, but who knows if we'll get that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Sony's shutdown factories say what now?
I do want to actually clarify on that because our original news article went up and it was misleading. Sony is it isn't true that they are no longer producing Blu-rays. They're no longer producing recordable Blu-rays. So you won't be able to purchase Blu-rays to like burn your own stuff on.
That's how it starts, Lindsay.
Okay.
That's how it starts.
I'm just saying.
That is a good clarification, but yes. I'm a physical media guy and I get very suspicious with companies like Netflix where we haven't even gotten the rest of Stranger Things on Blu-ray. They came out with the first 2 seasons and then nothing.
For realsies?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And that's like one of their best, that Orange is the New Black.
That's like their show. That's like their flagship show.
Squid Game, you think you'd be able to get that as well too? Wow. Yeah. So that's where Orb is right now. Just really interesting conversations as far as like the atheism, naturalism. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to start seeing some stuff about reformation as well, because that's going on in the background. Is the church is already, the Orthodox Church is already having wars and shit with reformation because they think
Martin Luther's coming for your ass.
Yeah. So that's already going on. And then we're talking about the Liberation Front's talking about teaming up with them as far as distributing the book.
Because they've got a printing press.
Because they've got like printing movable blocks. Type.
Yeah.
Movable type.
It's better than scribes.
It's way better than scribes. So something else that I think Nikki said earlier in the Discord is that you could put Orb, Bookworm, and the game Pentinent next to each other as the Gutenberg printing press. It's integral to all three of those. One of them is a video game, but anyway, that's where we are on Orb. We'll have our weekly updates as that goes on. Zenshu, I think, I don't know if we're going to do Zenshu every week, but we are going to do it today. James, what do you think of Zenshu?
I love everything about it, and it's amazing and wonderful, and Yunio is my king, my prince, my lord, my savior. I was not expecting to love this show as much as I do.
Yeah.
I think once I realized that not only was it a really good action-adventure show, not only does it put pretty much any isekai that doesn't begin with the words re:0 to shame, it's also funny as hell.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, and a part of this might be, and I'm going to do what I did with Dandadan. I'm watching the English dub. The English dub is incredible. It's very funny.
Yeah.
And I was laughing out loud consistently just at like random line deliveries and little visual jokes that they do just every single episode, culminating in what I'm sure we'll talk about this week's episode, which has the funniest scene I have seen in a very long time.
Yeah.
When our hero uses her magic anime drafting powers to literally Fujoshi the day to save the day with the power of horny anime fangirls.
Yeah. So for those who like haven't watched any Zenshu at all, there's four episodes out. Four episodes out. It is an isekai in which this highly talented animator who has become a little too full of perfectionist in her ways isn't allowing anyone else on production to correct or steer anything. Everything has to be done to her standards, which are way too high. Eats bad clams and finds herself inside the world of this anime film that she was obsessed with before she made it big. And she finds that her only power, she has a magical girl transformation, but instead of getting a new costume and magic powers, I don't even know the technical term for the item, but it's like a pin board. It like holds all the papers at an animation desk so you can flip them at your desk. It talks to her and then summons her animator desk, in which she's able to light speed draw something and summon it into the world, and then usually ends up unconscious for however long it would have taken her to draw that in real time.
The keyframes, right? And so that's why, because a lot of it is, it's a running joke about the anime industry where she's like, oh, this would have taken me 3 days of literal nonstop backbreaking work to do.
Yeah.
And so whenever she summons it, she passes out for 3 days straight.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to imagine the people drawing the scenes are just like, oh. I feel this.
Yeah.
I too wish for 3 days of uninterrupted coma sleep.
Yes. Yes. And in the meantime, she's been using this ability to subvert the plot of what happened in the original film. We have the main character, Luke, who's this blonde guy who kind of looks like he stepped out of a Hiromu Arakawa anime. He looks vaguely like Edward Elric or the main character from Heroic Legend of Arslan.
Yes.
We have Unio, not to be mistaken with Unico, although it's pretty much the exact same legally distinct Unico, who is a lady's horse.
A pervert,
play horse. I don't think he actually gets a lot of action, but he tries. And then you have, I've never said this name out loud, Memelm, who's an elf. And then there's the funky little robot guy who looks vaguely like some sort of piece of clay artwork that I feel like I've seen somewhere.
We've seen it so many times.
We've seen it.
What's the name? Like QZ? QJ. QJ.
QJ, okay. QJ. And then that's the whole crew, plus the director. Her name is actually Natsuko.
Don't forget Destiny.
Destiny.
Destiny, the tragically stupid, skimpily dressed love interest.
Oh, yeah, we just didn't see her at all in the last episode, which is why I completely forgot her. Yes.
Now she's busy. She's running her orphanage as a tiger-themed pro wrestler.
Yes, she's running an orphanage now as a distinct, not tiger's mask pro wrestler.
Oh, that's right. It's not a tiger's mask. It is a...
I think it's a
serval. A serval mask.
Serval cat mask.
Her legally distinct serval cat-themed pro wrestling orphanage plotline.
Yes. Yeah, let me, I should be pulling up pictures of the characters while we talk about this. So as I was saying, this is Natsuko, usually purple hoodie. Usually you can't see her face. She's kind of like a cousin it thing. You know, the hair is usually over the face. Every once in a while she ties it up so you can see her face. Or
she is a perfect gremlin queen.
Yes.
And we love her.
And
she
just
wants to eat and draw.
Yes. And this is her with the pin board. And then let's get to... This is her growling at Yunio, who is not usually dressed fancy like this, but in this
he's usually naked, she points out.
He's usually naked. He can also transform into a more majestic unicorn version instead of being like a chibi mascot version. So that's kind of his bit. Oh, yeah. Okay. And then Destiny here. Let me find a good picture of... Here's Destiny now as the Serval Cat wrestler, and I wonder if she will come back. Like, one of the things that Natsuko said about her in the film is that everything is kind of her fault, because she's like,
because her freaking, well, because her like her skimpy clothes keep getting caught in doorways.
She has like the dancer outfit from classic RPG sort of thing, right?
Where like Shantae.
Yeah, like Shantae kind of thing. Yeah. So, oh, and I didn't actually really show a picture of Luke. So here's Luke.
This is one of my favorite smash cut jokes in the whole episode so far, because the very next scene after he says, see, it's just choir practice. Nothing weird about it. Well, they're summoning the devil.
Oh no, they're summoning the devil. So yes, in this particular episode, we find out that Memelin is tragically has been cursed with an extremely long life. Not literally a curse. She's just an elf, and you know, kind of like Frerin. They live for live for a really, really long time. And she's sick of watching all of her friends, family, everyone die in the same conflicts over and over. So they've just decided to basically summon world-ending, annihilating entity, so they can all just die. Mm-hmm. Forever, and just end the endless cycle of suffering. Metal as hell. They're singing the song where the first part is in English, and I'm trying to remember what it was. It was like, end tomorrow's loneliness. Like, they don't literally say fuck tomorrow, but it's more like that. And they're like headbanging.
Yes.
Everyone is stomping and headbanging. That's the dance to do this. And so Natsuko has to come up with, well, how do I stop Memelin's despair? How do I convince her to live? And like all of us, the answer is Mamoru Miyano. Because let me get to... She draws Mamoru Miyano, and this is just a giant Utapri thing, right? Like, Memelin is in...
She gets her aerial dress.
She gets her aerial dress. They have a dance sequence. There is a song. People pointed out that this sequence also is giving nods to Disney, specifically like Beauty and the Beast. And there's a part where we don't have a screenshot of it, but there's a part where they're like flying over a moon, and there's a legally distinct Disney castle underneath it. And it's referential, but not like one-to-one of just the Walt Disney opening credit sequence.
It's got the vibe.
Yes. Yeah. So we have that going on, and there's another scene, I think, during the dance, someone else pointed out that is taking nods from the Belle and Beast dance sequence that is pretty famous. But that's one of the things I love about Zenshu, is because all the episodes are giving nods to particular inspiring animation sequences.
Yeah, we got the Missile Circus, we got a Demon Thingy from Nausicaa.
Yes. Yeah.
Tiger Mask.
And we have, we've had Tiger Mask. So just, it's really fun to watch. I don't expect Mamoru Miyano will come back, but this was enough to raise her spirits so she can stan the character for all eternity. So, you know, sometimes fandom, fanfic, the community you can build around that, I was about to say kind of like therapy. It's not therapy, but I mean, it really brings people together.
Yeah, so. It keeps us going in tough times.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like Sailor Moon fandom got me through all of my teenage years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty integral to me for that.
The Lost fandom, the message boards and hunting through the mysteries. And that's basically the thing that kept me sane in high school.
Yeah, for real. Okay, if we can go off on a Lost tangent.
I'm happy to, because my wife and I just hit season 3 the other day, and I'm riding this train with a big old smile on my face.
My mom, at least last I talked to her, was on season 5.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So they're really powering through.
Yeah. Yeah. She said they were watching so much of it that it would get to the point where it's like, we can't put another episode on. Like, I just can't watch more Lost right now. We have a life to live. We have a life to live. Yeah. So I was not in that forum space, but I did put this on Blue Sky, and I was wondering if it rang a bell with you. Like, wasn't there shipping or fandom wars over Sawyer and one of the other primary male characters? Who was the other one? Was it Jack?
Yeah. Jack and Sawyer and their eternal love triangle battle over Kate.
So is this like similar to Team Edward, Team Jacob, only for Lost?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
You're like, how dare you compare me to Twilight?
Yeah, honestly, there was a part of my brain that was like, we're not about to do this, Lindsay. But then I was like, no, that's technically, I guess, fair.
Yeah.
The show definitely plays it up. There are plot lines where like the villains will literally use their sexual tension against them.
Oh, they'll really?
Like, yeah, they'll like one they'll have characters making out, and then another character will see and they'll be like, see, she doesn't actually care about you. You should help us out instead. And it's like, oh shit, that's how they turn to the dark side. But yeah, that's the primary love. I don't want to spoil anything for anyone that hasn't seen the show my wife, who is sitting maybe like 30 feet away from me on the other side of the wall. But there are other sides to add to the polyhedron of love as things go. But
yeah, I was just curious, like if you recalled from back in the forum days, like what were the pros cons of Jack versus Sawyer? Because my mother and my grandmother have picked sides and they are opposing.
Really? I will say I appreciate Jack a lot more as a character as an adult.
Yeah.
I didn't hate him when I was younger, when I was a teenager watching the show, but he definitely is like a sad, depressing man.
Okay.
In a lot of ways, like he has a lot of baggage. Sawyer is too, but Sawyer's funny.
Okay.
Sawyer's real funny. He has all his little nicknames. Yeah. And I cannot stress this enough for anyone who has not watched the show. One of the most attractive men to ever walk the face of the earth.
Okay.
Like, just,
did the actor go on to do more after this, or was
Mostly TV. He never really had. He never broke into film, but he's still doing TV. But when I was younger, I always thought it was like not even a contest. You know? Like Jack basically in my opinion, was always that he only was in the love triangle because he was ostensibly like the main character of the show. And if he wasn't, there wouldn't have even been a chance.
Yeah. Sawyer has all the riz, right?
Oh, it's unreal.
Yeah.
I mean, that dude, he gets introduced as like a racist hick.
Okay.
And he's not, mostly. It's complicated. Okay. But the fact that he can so easily overcome that stigma just by looking at you and smiling, that dimple cheek smile, it is bewitching. It is genuinely uncanny.
It has worked on my 83-year-old grandmother. She thinks Sawyer is the bee's knees.
Grandma's got taste.
he's great. On the other hand, my mom prefers Jack. And I don't know if it's because she likes Jack or just because she really, really doesn't like Sawyer. Which, according to her, and I haven't watched Lost in probably close to 10 to 15 years, so bear with me if like this isn't accurate or whatever, but at least according to her, Sawyer is a con artist.
Yes.
Manipulative. Mm-hmm. She just thinks he's slimy.
Uh-huh.
And she had some pretty strong words for people that she felt liked him as well, to the point where I was like, mom, like
Lindsay,
that's so judgy.
But Lindsay, we can fix him.
So Sawyer is a we can fix him.
He's a broken, sad, lonely boy.
Yeah.
That's putting on this mask of sliminess because he doesn't think he deserves to be loved.
Okay.
And all he needs is someone to let in and teach him that it's okay for him to feel love and to feel that connection. He doesn't have to push people away. He doesn't have to ruin his relationships. He doesn't have to sabotage because he deserves to be happy.
So he wouldn't just drain our bank account and...
No, he might.
One day.
If we're talking, if it's before the island, then hell yeah, he might. Absolutely. Yeah. That's the risk. That's the risk. You never know, right? That's the danger.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
On the other hand, Jack, he's got a drinking problem.
Yeah.
And anger issues.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a control freak.
Okay.
But. He will protect you.
Okay.
Maybe.
She said she also really likes Hurley. I remember liking Hurley as well. Is he just like...
If someone dislikes Hurley, I think they're probably a bad person.
Yeah.
That's like a litmus test for me. Like, there, and any other character on that show, save for a couple others, like, you can have whatever opinion you want. I totally get it. It's a soap opera.
Yeah.
The writing is not always consistent.
Mm-hmm.
They're not always at their best. But if someone came up to me and said, man, Hurley, worst character in the show, I'd be like, I'm calling the cops right now on you because you've committed some kind of crime and you need to be punished for it.
Yeah. Gumby 2MS says Hurley ad maybe mean is Samwise. Maybe are you comparing Hurley with Samwise Gamgee as far as vibes?
Have Samwise vibes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Who's going to hate Sammy G? Who's going to hate him?
You can't.
Karen Frodo.
Yeah.
You know, keeping him away from Gollum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the ring. So the offering to share the load.
There's a reason that Weezer named an entire album after the character Hurley.
Yeah.
Because he's just so likable.
Oh, so that wasn't after like the skating brand.
No. Oh, okay. No, the cover of the album is literally the character Hurley.
Oh, okay.
It's the actor. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for catching me up on Lost. That's definitely what this show is about, but I couldn't help myself. I had that conversation with my mom. I'm like, you know who needs to hear this? James. So I'm glad we have it on the record. Thanks everyone for tuning in for this week of the ANN After Show. We will be back next week. It'll be either 6 or 6:15. It just really depends on whether I have to pick my kid up or not.
Deal with that life.
Yep. And we might be talking about Apothecary Diaries. I don't want to kill James, so we'll just see where he is.
Doing my best.
Otherwise you'll get another Zenshu installment, which I'm sure everyone's fine with as well.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The ANN After Show is an official podcast of Anime News Network. You can hang out with us live on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Twitter. Listen to our podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. The ANN After Show is hosted by Lindsay Loveridge and James Beckett and is produced by Lindsay Loveridge.